Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Just a quick message from me to you saying I hope this episode finds you well and healthy and that you're able to avoid as best you can the ravages of this medical crisis that the world is going through. I wanted to share with you just a note about today's episode and really all that will follow for the foreseeable future. We tend to try and have a production schedule of about a month lead time. So oftentimes the episode that you're hearing is recorded a month earlier, or maybe a couple weeks to a month earlier. And in this case, we recorded the episode with Shelley Ingram, as you will hear, about a month ago before all this nonsense and craziness started. And it's kind of unfortunate because in the episode, she talks about the joy that she has going into the office and building out her office and starting her practice as a solo. And of course, that's all changed. And what we're going to do is do another episode with Shelley in a month's time, because she is putting the finishing touches on the transition, as many of us have, of changing to a completely virtual office for her and her staff. So it'll be interesting to check back in with her in a little bit about how she accomplished that and what worked, what didn't work, and what challenges she had. So given that caveat, just keep that in mind when you listen to this episode. But I'm delighted that you're here with us today, and thank you for all your support throughout the years here at The Law Entrepreneur. And I hope that there's an end in sight to this crisis and that you remain healthy, wealthy, and wise. Okay? So without further ado, let's get started with episode 207. Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 207 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. Today, my guest is Shelley Ingram. Shelley is a solo practitioner with more of a small firm practitioner, as she has a couple of associates and other staff members. So, but she practices here in the Washington, D.C. area on the Maryland side of the river, and has a family law practice. And as you hear, has developed that practice over a number of years to be a thriving modern day practice within its own kind of physical setting, its own office space, although that wasn't always the case, as she was developing the firm from scratch without any portable business, you know, ahead of time. So truly jumping into the pool and learning how to swim right away. So there's a lot of interesting lessons to learn along the way in that kind of circumstance. And I'm delighted to share her story with you. So here, without any further delay, is Shelley Ingram. Shelley Ingram, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here with us today, Shelley. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. I have a small family law firm in Howard County, and we practice throughout Maryland. We offer litigation, mediation, and collaborative services, basically full-service family law firm, divorce and family law specifically.
Yeah. How long have you been doing family law?
I have been practicing family law exclusively since 2006, and I've had my own firm since 2012.
Great. What motivated you to start your own practice?
You know, it's interesting the way I became a solo, which was I was working for a small family law firm, And I'd really gone as far as I could go there with respect to growth opportunities. And I began looking for new positions for myself. And I was concerned about starting over with a new firm, given my years of experience and the fact that I didn't have what I considered to be a portable book of business as an associate. So I started thinking a lot about work-life balance and firm culture. And really, you know, I knew how much I billed per hour and I knew how hard I could work. So I thought about return on my time investment with respect to going to work for someone else. I think it was a risky decision to become solo, but it's been a really good decision. And I was lucky that I had a supportive spouse who encouraged me, and together we decided it was the right time for me and my career to give it a try. So I never looked back.
Did you have an entrepreneurial background, or had, you know, being in business for yourself, was that something you were familiar with, or the idea of opening up your own practice, was that completely foreign to you?
Well, I will say I never thought I would hang out a shingle. I never imagined myself having a firm. I've always been a very hard worker and I love business, but it wasn't something I really planned for. And I certainly didn't have any entrepreneurial or self-employment type experience before starting my firm. I think I was lucky in that I worked for some other small firms. So I had the opportunity to observe how small firms operated firsthand from the inside during the years that I worked as an associate elsewhere.
Sure, sure. But you get to that point where you make the decision, well, I think I'm gonna do this on my own. Then, you know, how long of a ramp did you have, and how did you prepare for that event?
Well, it's funny. I think I would say, with respect to solo and small firm life, I'm still ramping up. But I imagine it was a few months from the time that I made the decision. I think the first step I took was registering my LLC and purchasing my domain. From that point until the time that I left the firm that I was with before and really was on my own.
And when you
so started, a few months' time.
When you started, what were your physical arrangements? Were you working from the kitchen table, or did you immediately jump into a rental office situation, or how did that manifest itself?
Yeah, I think I expected to be writing motions from my back deck in the sunshine working from home. I had a virtual office, so I met with clients at a Regis space. I used their conference room and their mailing address for my firm because I thought it was important, especially in family law, to have a brick and mortar address that wasn't my home.
Yeah, for sure.
And I did most of my work at home. I have a small home office and I stayed that way for really only a couple of months because I quickly found that for me, I needed to put on business attire and go into a workplace. I felt more productive that way. And it also gave me an opportunity to have what seems somewhat unattainable in solo and small firm life, but office hours. So I had hours that were dedicated only to work without the interruption of my dog or my dirty laundry or that type of thing. So for me, an actual office space was very important as to my overall productivity. So I got into a regular office space at Regis within a couple months' time.
Yeah, it's a catch-22 in a lot of ways. You know, the solo practice gives you the flexibility to work where you want and when you want, but it also doesn't help you establish those boundaries as to what your work hours, your office hours are. And it's a slippery slope. You can, you know, from doing a little work in the afternoon to all of a sudden working all around the clock.
Well, I think that's right. And actually, you know, I would say that I do work at home, but having time to see clients, you know, so the things that I work on at home maybe are something to do with marketing or something to do with bookkeeping, but not sort of client responsibilities. So the nature of that type of work is a little bit different, and it's not work that I bill by the hour. I think a responsibility to make sure that when I'm doing billable hour work, that I'm giving my client the most efficient billable hour. So to me, it's really important to be in a workspace with limited distractions so that I can get as much done as possible at the most effective hourly rate for the client.
Yeah, and the choice of a practice area also helps dictate some of those decisions, because as you mentioned, family law is one of those areas where you do have a lot of client interaction. And while yes, you can do a lot of it electronically via, you know, either phone or video conferencing and the like, there comes a time when you do have to spend some face time with the client. And because of the nature of the practice, you want to make sure that's, you know, in an environment that is supportive of the client and protective of your privacy.
That's right.
Yeah. So when you started, then let's just go to the point where you had regular office space and hours. You were still solo at the time, a true solo. Is that correct at that point?
That's right. Yep. I will say I was a true solo. I answered every telephone ring. I scanned every piece of mail. I did all of the scheduling. I did everything. And I loved that. And at that time, I had the time to do all of those things because I didn't have a full caseload of clients.
Right. The more clients you get, the harder that becomes to do.
Yeah. And so over time, I have really progressed in a way that I think is steady, but slowly. I started with using Ruby Receptionist, which is, I think, one of your sponsors, to handle my phone calls.
That's correct.
To help me with phone management. And then I eventually got to where I wanted someone to also help me with the mail. So I picked up a law clerk who could do a little drafting, a little phone answering, and a little mail. And then I had a part-time assistant who eventually became a full-time assistant. Then my law clerk graduated and she became my first associate. And it's really grown since there.
So your law clerk was a live body. You didn't use like a virtual paralegal or virtual law attorney.
No, I've never used a virtual attorney, paralegal, or law clerk. I have had virtual assistants along the way do different things for me, having to do with social media posts and sure. things like that, but never anyone that would have any client contact or do any drafting for me.
Okay. And are you still a Ruby client?
I am not a Ruby client anymore, but I was for quite some time. And sure. It just got to be where the phone was, to my pleasure, ringing quite a bit. And I thought it made sense to have a live person in the office who could also do some of the mail and the other administrative tasks that I had.
Sure. So there's that trade-off when you get to that point.
Right. It's a good place to be.
Absolutely. It's a good problem to have. So what's your staffing level like now?
Sure. Right now I have two associates and I have two full-time support staff, a paralegal and a legal assistant. And then I have two part-time people who work with me, a bookkeeper and a law clerk.
And what's the biggest challenge in terms of staffing and management of that staff for you?
Yeah, I think, it's interesting. I've had a lot of staffing challenges along the way. I think that is the one thing that I really didn't feel prepared for with respect to starting my firm. And I've been a really hard worker myself. And I assumed that everybody would plug in and care just as much about the office as I did, which I learned kind of the hard way wasn't always the case. So, hiring staff has been difficult. In a small firm, every personality, every skill set that people bring to the table really makes a difference to the way the team works together. So being able to identify what those skills are and finding people that are just the right fit for my small office is something that I've learned the hard way. And then also, of course, letting people go when they were not a good fit was something that was a struggle for me in the beginning. I've done a few things to make it easier for me, which is I've learned where the best place to find good employees is for my specific business. I worked with an employment lawyer to put together an employee handbook so that people who come to work for me have an expectation of what they're going to get. They're going to be offered by way of compensation and benefits by working in my office. And I also had a really top-notch. My first assistant was really amazing, and she still is working with me part-time. She's now just performing the bookkeeping functions, but she helped me put together my first admin procedure binder. So now when I have support staff come and go, I can quickly get them up to speed with how things work in the office without having to take a lot of my one-on-one sort of billable time away.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. If you've been throwing money at Google and you haven't been happy with the casework you're attracting, it's time to switch up your marketing strategy. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of legal marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel and push you to spend thousands on pay-per-click ads. Instead, they work with solo and small law firms to stay top of mind with your network to increase referrals, which we all agree are the best kind of clients. To help show you how to do that, they are giving away a free copy of their new book, The Ultimate Solo Lawyer's Guide to More Referrals and Better Clients. This book is a great tool for entrepreneurial-minded attorneys like the listeners of The Law Entrepreneur because it provides a framework to help you build a well-oiled marketing machine that positions you as an expert in your field and creates consistent referrals for your business. The Spotlight Branding team believes in this way of marketing so much that they are giving away free copies of their new book to lawyers across the country. To claim your copy, just go to spotlightbranding.com/guide and fill out a short form with your contact information. Spotlight Branding, a better way to market your law practice. Well, systematizing the approach to staffing and office management is a huge hurdle to get over. And for you to get that, you know, accomplished, at least first cut and maybe first few iterations thereof, for you to get that done early in the life cycle of your firm speaks to your success because it is one of the more difficult things to do.
Yeah, I would say for the most part, I've been very lucky with the people who I've had working for me and with the contributions that each person that's been a part of my office has made to help me get where I am. So I'm really grateful on the whole, but it has not been without learning opportunities for them and for me with respect to being the kind of leader that people want to work with.
Well, you mentioned one of the successful steps along the way that you achieved was learning where to find the best people.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a secret?
Oh, no, it isn't. It isn't. And part of the secret I have found is really being prepared to be looking all the time, even when you don't need a person. Because what I found to be sort of one of the biggest difficulties is because my firm is small and every person is really a needed set of hands on deck when we lose people in the office because their lives just take them different places and it's somewhat unplanned, being able to fill those vacancies very quickly. So I've gotten to where I kind of keep a rotation of ads for attorneys at the local law schools. With respect to support staff, I really like posting my support staff ads with the National Association of Legal Assistants. They will let you post an ad on their site for free, and then it links up with Indeed, which you would normally have to pay to post on. But if you, if they pick up your ad through the National Association of Legal Assistants, then the Indeed listing is free. Mm-hmm. So there's really no sort of reason not to keep an ad running all the time.
And for our audience who don't recognize the geographic issues that somebody in your position faces, you're in Howard County, Maryland, which for the rest of our audience, you know, Howard County is a very mobile county. You've got a great amount of military personnel in Howard County. You've got a lot of government intelligence operations there at Fort Meade and the like up there. So there's a lot of transients in that county. And so I imagine that had, even if only tangentially, had some effect on your ability to staff positions.
That's right. That's right. That has had an impact. And I think, you know, it's very hard because in a small firm, I really come to feel like family with the people who work with me, but I, you know, have to be prepared when their actual families and their lives take them elsewhere to keep my phones answered and my mail processed and to at least have the appearance of continuity for clients. because they want to know that your situation is stable, particularly in family law, when their situations may not be.
So now with, a half dozen or so folks in your practice, what's your physical space arrangements now? Like, you have a separately leased office, or are you still working with a company like Regis?
Yeah, I do actually. It's interesting because, as I said, I have had a very slow but steady progression. And I am really proud that just in January, we went into our full-blown commercial lease for our office. Mm-hmm. So now we're in Maple Lawn in Howard County. So we're in, a Class A commercial building with our own regular commercial lease. And so that was, really fun growing opportunity for me with respect to outfitting the office with all of the furnishings and right. the decor, and making sure that the tech that I had that worked one way in my shared commercial space continued to work efficiently for our firm in the new configuration.
Yeah. Well, did you get any help with that in terms of either the lease negotiations or location selection, or then ultimately outfitting and decorating the space?
Yes. In a couple of different respects, I got some help. And it's funny because while I am an attorney and within the context of family law, I negotiate separation agreements and contracts, I don't negotiate commercial leases. So I talked to some lawyers that I know, and I had an attorney help me review the commercial lease for my space to make sure that, the opportunities that I had to get things that would work out a little bit better for my firm, that I knew where those places were. Because without having a lot of working familiarity with commercial leases, I think it's easy to miss the negotiation spots in a lease. So I had help with that. I have an IT person now who helps me. So when I need to pick out additional, networking gear or buy new computers or printers, he helps me select those things. So I had some help with that. And then I used a decorator for the space because literally I came to the office with a handful of computers, some phones, and two file cabinets. So I didn't have a client chair. I didn't have a desk. I didn't have anything. So I had someone help me put together the decor for the office, which was nice.
Is that process done, or are you still evolving?
I am pleased to report that I am finished. I think as of last week, changed our printing setup to have a regular full-size office printer. And so that came, and the last of the installation for that happened last week. But the process has been underway since probably August of last year. So, slow moving even once I made the decision to upgrade my office space, and a lot of small decisions to be made, but I'm really happy with the way it turned out.
What's the guilty pleasure in your new office space that you added that's just for you?
Yeah, it's really funny. I have two things that are my guilty pleasures that I'm thrilled to have in my office. And one of them is a sit-to-stand, an electric sit-to-stand desk. Great. So right now I'm at my standing desk, which I love, but after the call is over, I might push the button and it'll settle back down and I'll be sitting at my sit-to-stand. And my new office has a kitchenette, a full kitchenette. So I like to have great snacks in the office. I tell everyone that that's for the clients because they may like snacks if they're under stress, but
it's your cover.
I am super motivated by snacks. I think most people are. So we've got great coffee and great snacks all the time. And the truth is, clients almost never eat them, but they make me very happy.
Well, I guess it's a testimony to the difference between your practice and mine. One of my driving factors when I outfitted my first office was I wanted a dry bar. So I had that whole image, I guess from TV or whatever, about after hours and attorneys sit around and open a good bottle of scotch. So that was a driving design factor for my office. So a little different, but maybe.
Yeah, I like the way you think, Neil. I do, but I'm going to take my cocktails at home with my husband and my dog.
There you go. So you touched on it. Tell us about your tech setup. What tools do you use? What's your saving Grace? Do you have a project management platform that you use and the like?
Sure. That's a couple of questions, I think. So I have a Mac-based practice, which Yay. Back in 2012, when I started the office, it was only one Mac, so it wasn't particularly complicated. And I thought, okay, this will work, until I realized that the state's child support program wasn't Mac compatible. Right. And then I quickly wondered if I'd made the right decision. The good news is, since 2012, there's been a lot of new Mac integrations. And as I've added Macs to my practice, it's been super easy to get the new computers online. And I'm really pleased with the sort of mobility that the Macs offer me and the sort of plug and play setup that the Macs offer. And with respect to sort of, I would say, a greater front loaded expense as far as acquiring the new Macs, I have found that they have all really performed for much longer than what I think some of the counterparts in the Windows world would have given me. So, Mac practice. I would say that the one tech thing that I did that's pretty simple that I wish I had done much sooner would be the Fujitsu SnapScan.
Oh, yeah.
I purchased all-in-ones for my office before, Brothers. They were very good, but the scan features were a little bit slow. And we are, being in the shared commercial space before, real estate was at a premium. So paper storage was not something that I liked to entertain. And then, of course, if you do want to work out of the office, having paperless files really helps. So those snap scans were a great investment and saved a ton of time for me and a ton of time for my staff.
So you get the iX 500 and 1500 family?
Yep, that's right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's worth every penny.
It's the Cadillac of desktop scanners. Just really fast. What most people don't realize is it does duplex. It does both sides.
It does it seamlessly. And it actually takes out blank pages and it levels up the scans when they're crooked.
Yeah.
It's really top notch and it quickly adapts for any size of paper. And they're just big time savers. And the truth is, it really wasn't that expensive. I'm not sure why I waited. And then, of course, if you buy those sort of full grade models, you get a partial version of Adobe that you can use to sort of further manipulate your scans, which I think is a big cost and time saver. And so,
most importantly, it OCRs them on the back end, so it makes those scans searchable.
You got it. Absolutely right.
Which is just is really the only way to go, frankly.
Yeah, so I can't believe I waited on those. And so as to practice management, we use a lot of cloud-based programs. So we're on Clio for our practice management. I've got QuickBooks Online for banking, LawPay, which has an online functionality for credit card processing. I use RingCentral for my phones and faxes. So it's digital and portable, and there's an app on my smartphone so that I can call out from anywhere or receive calls, and it's seamless through the office mainline, which is nice when I'm on the go. And then, apps for my phone. I'm always one to be interested in new apps and share new apps that I find with people. So my favorites are Mile IQ for mileage tracking, which is super fun mileage tracking app. If you are a nerd and you think mileage tracking apps are fun. And I really like Scanner Pro, which is not for converting photos to PDF and allowing you to email them on the fly, so that if you're in the courthouse and you don't want to send, you need to send something, some document that was just signed, out to whomever, you can convert it to PDF quickly by taking a photo and then also email it. Of course, with iPhones, you can at least send the picture very quickly, but then on the back end, some people, depending upon the size of your photos and their setups, have a hard time processing that. So having the opportunity to turn things quickly into PDF, I think, helps.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind J jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Yeah, it's very important. And I think you've got all the right tools there. And a lot of them integrate and work together. Was that by design, or did you just kind of get lucky and fall into that? Because of course, Clio works with LawPay. Also works with, what else did we mention? We mentioned QuickBooks Online.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because Clio, you know, I've been with Clio for a long time, and I've been really happy with the services that I've received through Clio and the integrations, and they're always adding new plugins, which really help to streamline small firm life. But they didn't have a QuickBooks integration at first.
Right.
And the LawPay integration was not excellent at first, but they're getting better and better all the time, which is great because I keep adding users and the expense keeps getting more.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I still feel like it's a value-added proposition for my firm.
Sure, sure. Are you using Clio Grow on the intake side?
You know, so I have. I went to the Clio conference 2 years back when they launched Clio Grow, and yeah. I did set myself up as a subscriber to that, but I'm ashamed to say that I have not fully integrated that with my intake services, but I look to work on that. I actually,
we all have those major projects on our list.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, it's much like home ownership. You never really get done unless you don't want to continue to grow your office. The best thing is to always be looking to learn or do something a little bit better or more. So that's where I am.
Sure. Sure. And how about in terms of, general office productivity applications, are you still within the Apple family, or do you use Microsoft products or the Google suite?
Yeah, sure. So we, you know, I wish I could say that we were true to Apple with respect to using Pages and things like that, but we use Microsoft Office for Mac. So that has made it a lot easier for me when I bring people in to work for me, because the Microsoft Office for Mac applications are pretty similar to what they would be on a Windows platform. So at least people who aren't Mac familiar don't have to. Yeah. But actually, you know, with respect to hiring and finding people that are the right fit, I have learned that unless someone checks all of my boxes and then a few more, if they don't have Mac experience, they're not going to be good fits for the office, because while I find the Macs to be pretty intuitive, not everybody does. So,
I will share with you a little nugget that I learned at the ABA Tech Show in Chicago, which was just last week when we are recording this podcast. It will be about a month ago when the podcast airs. But I had learned, and I'm almost embarrassed being an Apple tech nerd, to say this, but I learned that you can download the Microsoft Office app for your phone for free.
Oh, that's right. Yep, that's right.
Somehow I'd missed that. And so while I've never had a real difficulty in terms of being able to go back and forth between Apple-based products and Microsoft-based products, I do recognize that in some cases, just eliminating that one step would be efficient and useful. And so while I was sitting there at the conference and that revelation was shared with me, I downloaded the app and it works great.
Cool. Are you using the native Apple applications in your practice?
Yes. Pages?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. I've always done that. But that's not to say that I wasn't a Microsoft user in the past. I have been, but in the last 10 years, no. So tell me, where do you think you're going with your law firm? What's your aspirations? Are you at the perfect level of work and revenue and don't want to get any bigger? Or do you see yourself aspiring to something more?
Well, you know, it's funny. I feel like with respect to the growth of my office, when I started the firm, I did not envision having associates and having a full staff. I really thought I would be a full solo. But then I saw, you know, the opportunities that having staff would provide for me if I had the business to support it. So slowly, as my client base grew, I was able to find a balance between adding staff and managing my own workload. Now that I'm in my new office space, I really only have a place for one more support staff person to sit and no other attorneys. So I would say that unless I move, which as of right now, given what it feels like to resituate the office, I can't imagine. I think I'll be about the same size for the next 5 years unless I add another support staff person or someone that really convinces me that they're able to work in part from home or remotely or something like that. So I don't see more by way of personnel, but I'm always looking for ways to increase our productivity, increase our bottom line without increasing the cost to clients. So, you know, those kind of things.
Maybe virtual is a way to augment where you're at going forward.
That's right. I could see that. And there are a lot of people who, you know, while it wasn't for me, that kind of work environment, there are a lot of people that really thrive under those circumstances, or their circumstances are such that that's really the only way they could do it. So I could see myself considering that in the future if it was something I needed. And then, of course, I was just talking to a colleague the other day who's doing some remote mediations, you know, where everybody is sort of in their workplace or in their lawyer's office and they don't come together in person for mediation services. So I'm interested in things like that that allow clients and colleagues to stay in their offices and not have to pay for travel, but give them still the same full service. So I could see myself picking up on some more sort of non-traditional types of work to balance out the types of things that I do.
Great. Well, it sounds like a bright future, and it looks like it's been a joyful experience, not without some bumps along the way, but sounds like it's gone well for you. Shelley, tell our audience how they could reach out to you and follow up on anything that you had to say that they may be interested in.
Sure. Anybody can reach me through my email on my website. My website is Shelley, Shelley Ingram, Ingram, law.com. And I also have a firm presence on social media, so I'm available there. And I will say, you know, I really enjoy talking to other solo and small firm folks about what they're doing and answering questions for people who are starting out, because I was so lucky to have people answer those kinds of questions for me. So, you know, if anybody has any questions about anything I've said, I'd be happy to answer that.
Terrific. Well, we'll make sure all of that is in our show notes for people who are on the treadmill or in the car at the moment. Otherwise, can't jot that down. And hopefully they will take advantage of your kind offer going forward. Shelley, I want to thank you ever so much for taking the time to be with us today and being a guest here on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.